providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
Welcome back, continuing to listen to the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments that I spent with Jesse Felder. Some very interesting comments on how the market weakness is starting to play out alongside of what Jesse was seeing with some of his internal data. In this segment, we are switching our focus a little bit more to the precious metals. I am chatting with Jeff Christian, managing partner at the CPM Group. And Jeff, when I had you back on the show, I think it was about a month ago, we were talking about volumes when it came to precious metals, and you were mentioning that the physical market was still pretty slow. I wanted to get a general update from you. From your research, what have you seen in the gold and silver markets in terms of some of the physical demand?
Yeah, I think what we were talking about probably in early July was that during the spike up in gold prices and then silver prices in late June and last 2 weeks in June, you saw a big increase in trading volume on the COMEX futures and options in the London forward market and on the gold ETFs. But you actually saw very low purchases of physical metal by investors. And that was somewhat worrisome to us because we saw that as, well, these are short-term opportunistic people who buy and sell. They go long and they go short. And you're not seeing the follow-through in the physical market of buy and hold investors. And in late July and early August, as we've seen the prices move sharply higher again for gold and silver, you're seeing the same sort of thing. So, you know, in the first 6 days or 7 days of August, the new U.S. Mint, which publishes data on coins, has only sold one lot of 1,000 ounces of gold Eagles, and they've sold no silver. And that tells you that, if anything, physical investors in the United States and North America are probably reselling, taking the opportunity of $1,500 gold, $17 silver, to sell their metal rather than buying. And so you're seeing that continuation. It's the same sort of thing. Big increases in the trading volumes on the gold ETF, the COMEX futures and options in the London market, but not a big follow-through with those longer-term physical buyers.
So, Jeff, we talk a lot about how the Chinese buyers of metals are very price sensitive. Do you think that carries over a little bit, at least to the North American buyers as well, because of how quickly we've seen the move? Maybe they're sitting there going, you know what, I don't want to buy right now because it is $200 higher than it was 2 months ago.
I think, you're seeing people say, I don't want to buy because it's $200 higher. And you know, you're seeing on the internet people saying, you know, did I miss the move? There were people who, as I said, you know, there are a lot of people who are actually taking the opportunity of $200 higher gold prices to sell their gold. So you're seeing reflow, not only in North America, but you're seeing it in China, India, and Europe. You're seeing investors take the opportunity of higher prices not to buy and chase the price higher, but rather to sell. So that tells you that there's some sustainability issues in the upward move.
Now, when we talk about more, it sounds like the institutional money that is coming in because of the higher volumes on the COMEX, the gold ETFs, and over in London, do you think there's a lot more money that can flow into this sector and continue to drive this higher? Or are we reaching almost an exhaustion phase? The argument being that, you know what, hardly any money was being flown into the precious metals sector for a long time. And maybe this is just the beginning of a lot of inflows?
I think this is the beginning of a lot of inflows. There is a tremendous amount of money out there that could come into gold and silver. It traditionally has not come into gold and silver. Over the last several years, you've seen shifts in institutional money management, both on the buy side and on the sell side, the broking and investment bank business. And one of the things that we've seen are these opportunistic investors who came into the market 2006 to 2011 and then left, some of them are coming back in. And then you have other institutional investor, generalist fund managers who are getting involved in gold more now that weren't involved in the past. And then you have a lot of other people who, you know, were more traditionally focused on precious metals, who have continued to struggle for a variety of reasons. And in some cases, they're getting out of the business. Some cases, you know, the bull market hasn't come fast enough and soon enough for them. And they've been suffering. On top of that, you have these major, we're calling them transformational, but they're structural changes in the way the buy side institutional investors operate. And I think that that is right now probably having a net negative effect on commodities and precious metals. Ultimately, it could lead to increased dollar flows from institutional investors. But I think right now what you're seeing is that a lot of institutions are avoiding precious metals simply because they don't fit into their computerized models.
Now, can you give us a little bit more color on this? What changes have happened in the institutional traders' end that has shied them even further away from the metals?
Well, it's not so much shying away from the metals as a much broader shift in the way fund managers manage their funds. and you're moving much more toward computerized, what they're calling AI, although some of it's not very intelligent. But you know, there's much more computerized trading than there used to be, and there's much more reliance on computer-generated buy and sell signals and shorter-term type of trades. So you're seeing at any number of institutional investment management companies a reduction in the number of people who are portfolio managers who pay attention to markets and study the economy and make buy and sell recommendations, and a greater reliance on computer-generated buy and sell signals. And a lot of that focus, because more, you know, probably 99% of the financial money, financial assets under management are in stocks and bonds and currencies and not commodities, including oil and the big markets. A lot of the shift in toward AI is focusing on stocks and bonds and currencies right now, and sort of neglecting the commodities market. And that's, I think, also, you know, that's what I was referring to when I said, you know, on a short term or initial basis, it kind of negative for precious metals.
Okay, but maybe in time they will take more of a light to the sector, and who knows, that could bring in some more money. I want to circle around to some comments out of your gold yearbook from this year when you discussed the price movement. You, I think, wrote that you thought the price would rise slowly when it came to the precious metals, especially gold, and then it would explode higher as we saw some more of the retail audience get in, which I think is more of that physical buyers. Where do we stand here? Has this slow rise, this $200 move, it hasn't been all that slow. Has it caught you a little off guard?
It has caught us off guard. The price rise has come much faster than we thought. We thought we would be around $1,500 by the end of next year. And the fact that we're at $1,500 now with short-term hotter money being involved, and without the longer-term physical investment demand being what we would have expected, I think that tells us that it tells us nothing about the timing in the shift. It tells us that when the longer-term investors come back into the market, the price is probably going to rise faster and further than even we thought. And we would talk, you know, as we've been talking about record prices, 2023, 2025 for gold. The timing may still be the same, but I think that what we're seeing is that these markets are much tighter in terms of physical metal as well as the mechanics of the paper markets, the futures and options, so that when you do see that double barrel, what we've been saying is you need the short-term and the long-term investors to come back into the market. You've got the short-term investors involved right now. The long-term guys are absent. When the long-term guys come back, and that will be predicated on financial and political and economic developments, not necessarily on what's going on in the gold market. When the long-term physical investors come back, prices will probably rise much further than we had thought they would. simply because you're seeing the impact of the massive amount of money that is out there in the financial market relative to the size of the gold market.
Yeah, okay, some good points there, Jeff. And one other comment regarding gold. I like to look at gold and compare it to other markets, whether it's the U.S. dollar, whether it's U.S. equity markets or the bond market. Plus, there are some other markets that I think you can look to and get a gauge on where the gold price might be going. Where do you tend to look and compare gold to? And I assume you must have seen some pretty encouraging signs as gold has started to outperform a number of other markets.
Right. I mean, we compare gold to everything. Yeah. So we have, obviously we look at the bond market, and we think that interest rates are like the prime mover in all financial markets. And so it's a very complex relationship between interest rates and gold. It's not this, oh, interest rates rise, so gold falls, interest rates fall, so gold rises. I mean, if you look at the numbers and you actually study it, it's a much more complex relationship with all sorts of variables going back and forth. But we pay a lot of attention to interest rates. We start with the U.S. Treasuries, short-term and long-term. So we're looking at 90-day and one-year T-bills, but we're also looking at 10-year notes. And we look at the yield curve, and then we look at the spread between Treasuries and other current national government interest rates, benchmarks, and then we look at the spread between the Treasuries and commercial paper and private sector interest rates to see what's going on there. And a lot of what we're seeing there is pretty positive for gold because the interest rate markets are in disarray and they're at a flexion point where there's a lot of stresses in the economies that should determine whether or not interest rates rise or fall in individual countries that are being compounded and made much more complex by political and economic trends going on. Then we look at the stock market. We obviously look at the U.S. stock market because it represents probably still more than 40% of the global equity markets. And you have a lot of investors around the world who focus on the U.S. stock market. You know, we have investors in the Middle East and in Europe who don't like to invest in other markets. They like the greater regulatory oversight in the United States. They also like the economic and political structure in the U.S. They're more comfortable with it, believe it or not, than they are with political and economic structures and opportunities in other countries. So you pay a lot of attention to the U.S. stock market, but you also look at other markets. Obviously, in 2015, the Shanghai market was extremely important to the gold market. And then you look at currencies. And again, it's a much more complex relationship than a lot of people think. Gold doesn't trade at inversely to the dollar. Gold trades inversely to a currency of choice. If there's a currency of choice, it could be the dollar. It often is the dollar, but sometimes it's the euro or sometimes it's something else. You'll see that gold can be weak if there's a currency of choice. Right now, you don't have a currency of choice. You haven't had a currency of choice for a long while. People say, well, the dollar looks overvalued. I think the dollar is going to fall. But the reality is that with the unwinding of the Fed balance sheet and the unwinding of commercial banks' balance sheets, you've had a tightening of the supply of dollars needed to pay for everything from debt to trade, so that's kept the dollar up. So you have a lot of people say, well, I like the dollar, but I don't like the dollar, and I don't like the euro, and I don't like the British pound, and I don't like the yen. So there's no currency of choice. So gold is doing well against that. So we look at all of the financial markets, and we look for pockets of strength and pockets of weakness, and we look at investor perceptions of those markets, and that's where we come down with our view on gold. It's like, will investors find gold to be more attractive or less attractive relative to all of the competing assets they can get involved in?
Yeah, fair. I think it's very important to look at all those factors, especially globally, because gold is also a globally traded commodity. Just a final comment here then, Jeff. Have you upped any of your targets for the end of the year just because of how fast gold has moved?
Yes, we've upped our targets for gold and for silver. I think platinum, we're pretty much keeping it where it is, and palladium, we're pretty much keeping it where it is. But we have increased our targets. And we're also, you know, on the downside, we're saying, you know, a month ago we were saying that we thought the price could get back down to $1,300. Now we're saying we think that the price could get back down to $1,490. So obviously, you know, as the price changes, we change our view.
All right, Jeff, always great chatting with you. I really appreciate the way that you look at the precious metals, all commodity markets over at the CPM Group. Jeff, have a great rest of your weekend. Everybody stick around. I'm going to be right back with an update from Novo Resources. Thanks for your time, Jeff.
You're welcome.